605 6th Street South in Moorhead on November 7th, 1985. So, could I have you give us your full name?
Eric Martinson.
And what is your age now?
97.
And where were you born, Eric?
I was born in Moorhead. My home was where the Rourke Art Gallery is, on 4th Street.
I see. And your parents lived at that address?
Yes.
What was their name?
Well, my father's name was Ole, and my mother's name was Christine.
And what nationality were they?
Norwegian.
They were Norwegian. And your parents' place of birth?
Norway.
Do you remember the town?
Oh, yes. A small town, Hafslo, which is near Bergen, is where my mother was born. And my father was born at Stordal in Sunnmøre, Norway.
Do you remember the year of their migration to America?
Not exactly, but both my mother and father came in about 1870 or 71, I think.
What was your father's occupation?
Here in Moorhead?
Yeah. Yes.
He had a grocery store.
What was the name of the grocery store?
Well, Ole Martinson, I guess was it.
And do you know where that was located?
Oh, yes. I think where my father first started the grocery store was at, I think it's Ralph's Bar on 4th Street and Main, isn't it? On the northwest corner of the intersection. Be across from that Kirby's.
Oh, yes. Yes, I know where that is. Thank you for that. Tell us about your educational background. Did you attend the grade schools and high school here? Or?
Well, I graduated from Moorhead High in 1906. And then I went to North Dakota, well, they call it the Agriculture, North Dakota Agricultural College, which is now North Dakota State. I went there from high school, and I missed part of the next 2-3 years. I worked on a surveying crew on the Milwaukee Railroad, and so I should have graduated in 1910, but actually I graduated in 1912 from NDSU in civil engineering.
I see. Okay. Now we'd like to know how you got into the business that you're known so well for, into the oil business. How did this happen?
Well, I was a county highway engineer for 11 years, and then John Pitzenberger, who I knew real well, talked me into going into the gasoline business with him. So we were in the gasoline business for a year and a half, and then we decided to separate. We separated good friends, and he went on with the gasoline business, and I went to exclusive motor oils. And then that would be, we started in 1926, John and I, in the gasoline business. And then in 28, the Iceman, Albert Lund, came to me and wanted me to go into the coal business with him, which I did. And a few years later, I bought them out, and I was in the coal business. And, well, the coal sort of started to fade out, And then I got into fuel oil, and finally got to where there was no coal and all fuel oil with me. So and then I sold the business in 68.
Okay, going back now, you started with Mr. Pitzenbacher, and was that a partnership?
Yeah, just, well, we incorporated, but
you incorporated.
Just a part of partnership, yeah.
So it was an incorporation of two people?
That's right.
And that corporation lasted for 2 years?
Just 2 years. Mm-hmm.
And then you just simply divided?
That's right.
There was no sell-out or anything like
no,
that?
No, we just divided.
And then you had the motor oils and then took on a coal business?
Coal business.
Did you buy a coal business or?
No, we just started a new business.
You just started a new business. Okay. How many employees did you have?
Well, it varied. In the busiest time in the coal, I suppose I probably have 7-8 employees.
And could you tell me a little bit about how that business looked on a organizational chart? I'm assuming that you sat behind a desk that other people ran wagons or whatever. Could you tell me how you ran that business?
Well, I had a girl who took care of the office, and I was in there part of the time. And
Do you remember her name?
Yes, it's Viola Quillvang.
Excuse me, go ahead.
And her name was, maiden name was Junk. But, so then we get real busy, like in the coldest part of the winter, and I got to where I had both coal and fuel oil, and so good part of the winter, 1 year anyway, when we were short of help, I drove the oil truck. I never shoveled coal, but that's a little too heavy for me. But I drove the oil truck, and then.
Was in 1927. What kind of a truck was that in 1927?
With a what?
What kind of oil truck was that in 1927?
Well, I didn't have oil in 1927. That came probably in the 30s. Well, and. Up in the late 30s.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, when you took on the oil and coal, mm-hmm. then let's go back and explain your organization and who did what. I interrupted you when you started with Mrs. Junk. Mm-hmm. Or tell me about the rest of the employees.
Well, I had one man who worked for me for 15 years. He was just an all-around handyman. He's a carpenter. He's a mechanic. He's a painter. He could do anything. And he worked for me year-round then. And then the other fellows were just part-time. They'd start working when the coal began moving.
Okay, did the coal come in on railroad cars?
Yeah.
How did you unload those?
Well, to start with, it was, well, partially all done by hand to start with. They had what we call a wheel scoop. They would wheel the coal over a kind of an iron plate then from the boxcar into the coal bins. And later we got some... better equipment. We had conveyors in and then we had with what you call an undercar conveyor that you'd get the coal in these hopper cars and then drop the coal through a hopper in the bottom and then the conveyor up into a truck.
I see. So you had the handyman who did that part of the time, and when you had six employees, did you have someone who drove and delivered the coal, or did most people come and get their coal?
No. Not very many came. A farmer would probably haul his own coal. And they got to where they didn't want to haul either, so we'd deliver coal in the country, too.
And so in the beginning, let's see, the coal business started in 1928?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. In 1928, did you use horses, or did you use, was there trucks at that time?
No, I tell you, we didn't have horses. We started out with two trucks.
Model T's?
No, they were Chevys. They were Chevys. Finally got into, well, it got to where I would, I suppose I had six trucks. One, I didn't use them all the time, but a couple of spares, you know, that I could take to if we got busy.
So most of the six men that you employed did both unloading and loading and so on and that sort of thing.
That's right. But then I would say in the winter time I had one steady man who didn't drive a truck, but he unloaded coal and he would help load the trucks.
You happen to remember, Mr. Martinson, what the wages were in those days?
Yes, they were 35 cents an hour.
And there were no other benefits?
No.
I don't believe there was Social Security then, am I right? I think Social Security started with Roosevelt's administration, which began in 1936.
30 or 31
or 33, okay. Did most people just work 40 hours a week?
Well, to start with, when I first started in the coal business, we worked from 7 to 6. And then it wasn't long before they cut down and we'd work 8 hours in from 8 to 12 and then 1 to 5.
Did most of the men bring their own lunch, or where did they eat lunch?
Well, I suppose they went home, most of them, or if they didn't have a home, they ate at a restaurant.
All right. So, that's the coal. Now, oil, were you speaking of lubricating oil, or were you speaking of heating oil?
Heating oil. No, I got out of that lubricating oil business shortly after we started with the coal.
When did the heating oil business start?
Well, of course, they were heating with homes and other buildings with oil. I suppose when I started in the coal business. But then fuel oil gradually came into common use, you know.
So how did you start that business? Did you buy someone out?
No, I just bought a truck and had a couple of storage tanks, and that was it.
Did you have storage tanks installed underground or above ground?
No, they were all above ground.
Was that an expensive investment to start the oil business?
Well, it just led from one thing to another. Not too much. I never bought a new oil truck. I'd buy a used one.
And was the fuel oil loaded on these trucks from overhead, or were there pumps?
Well, to start with, I had one overhead tank, but otherwise we
gravity
gravity,
gravity
yeah But that was just for a short time. Then we got these upright tanks and had a pump.
Ran by electricity. Pump.
So we just loaded the trucks with this pump, you see.
Then when they delivered the oil to the homes, did they have a long hose from the truck?
Well, yes, but to start with, I just unloaded from the truck then to the filler pipe at the residence, and that was by gravity. But then it wasn't long before we got a pump on the truck then.
Right. So, this was a business that you started by yourself, the coal and the oil business, which happened in about 1928, and gradually you went into the oil business more, and as the demand for fuel oil and coal changed, you just went with the times.
That's right.
Was there any other members of your business? Did anyone buy in with you, or were there partners, or did you do it yourself?
No, I bought the Iceman out when he first started, but otherwise it was just my own business.
So you had Ice also?
No.
Oh. Okay. Hey, Mr. Martinson, I think I neglected to ask you where your business was located. It must have been located along the railroad tracks. Can you spot that for us?
Well, our office, to begin with, was in a part of an old depot building on the corner of 9th Street and Center Avenue, where the Holiday Service Station is now. And I bought that old building and the land that it stood on, and then I just destroyed tore the old building down and built the filling station there for Mobil Oil, that I leased to Mobil Oil. And then I built a small building kind of back next to the railroad tracks on 9th Street, that I had for an office for the fuel business.
Okay, the buildings that you built, did you build them yourself together with this handyman that you talked about, or did you have contractors?
No, we had, that was all on contract.
Do you remember who the contractors were?
Well, that was Kwame, Bert Kwame, Bert and Dick Kwame.
Would you mind telling us what you think was the value of your total investment for that operation in those days?
Well, it wasn't very much. as far as the coal business went, I had a minority interest with the Iceman, and I suppose together we probably had $5,000 tied up.
Right, now you received coal and oil from whom did you get your oil and coal?
Well, there were, at that time, I suppose at the peak of our part of the time in the coal business, I suppose we had six dealers in Moore, coal dealers. Now, that included lumber yards and grain people and things like that. And so we had, then of course we bought from several coal companies. The coal, practically all the coal came from Duluth or Superior. And they had, I think there were probably 16 dock companies, as we call them, and then lignite, of course, we bought that from Nines in North Dakota.
you remember the names of the suppliers, the name of the companies?
Oh, yes. There was Northwestern Fuel and Inland Coal and Dock Company and Berwyn Fuel Company, Stott Briquette Company. We bought from all of them.
Were there salesmen that called on you to tell you about the product?
Well, they would see quite a lot of these representatives of different coal companies, their headquarters in Fargo. Or that if they didn't live here, they'd probably be in Fargo more over the weekend. And they would, well, there were several of them that would call like Monday or Tuesday every week then.
Was that a competitive business?
Oh, very competitive.
So how did you determine where you should buy your coal?
Well, in the first place, we'd have to consider the brand of the coal, the saleability of it, you might say, and then it's kind of a personal matter too. These salesmen, they weren't high pressure as a rule. They just depended on the good relationship with the customer.
Did you consider most of them competent and honest? And
oh, yes, they were usually quite honest. Those that weren't, why, didn't do much business with them.
Now, Eric, in furnishing fuel oil and coal to your customers, did they pay cash, or how did you handle the financial arrangements with your customers?
Well, most of the sales were credit sales, and some were cash. And then we were quite liberal with extending credit to people that we figured were responsible. And we weathered the tough years in the early 30s, and so it wasn't too bad.
In the beginning, there was no interest added if you didn't pay after 30 days, was it?
No interest, no.
Did you ever do that? Did you add the interest?
No,
the last?
Never did.
Okay. I was going to go into the matter you said your building was located at the corner of 7th Street and Main.
It was Center Avenue and 9th Street.
Center Avenue and 9th Street. Do you still have any connection with that property?
I own the land.
And what building is located there at the present time?
Well, that's the Holiday Station Stores.
And you still own the land, and you lease that land to the Holiday.
Holiday, that's right. Right.
If you were going to do it all over again, would you do it about the same, or would you make any changes?
Well, I think in the tough years, during the Second War, I felt at that time that I should have gotten out of the coal business, because there was a lot of grief with it. You couldn't get help, and it's hard to get coal and all, our margin of profit was regulated by the government, and really for a couple of years we didn't make a living, but survived one way or another.
You mentioned to me before our interview that the price of coal might have been in, let's see, what range was that? What do you consider to be the lowest price that you sold coal for and the highest price that you sold it for?
Well, I think lignite coal, that was the lowest price. That was about $5 a ton. And a good eastern coal, as we call it, came from Kentucky or West Virginia. That probably sold about $12 a ton.
And this would have been in the early 30s, 1930s.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And when you retired from your business, and what year did you retire?
I retired in 68.
What was the value of coal then, or price of coal?
Well, there was not very much coal sold.
Oh, yeah.
You see, fuel oil had taken over. But I suppose the best coal would probably be around $30 a ton.
Okay. Tell me about fuel oil in the same range and what happened.
Well, the fuel oil, I think what we call number two oil, I think about the lowest price was around 15 cents a gallon. Now it's up around a dollar, of course.
Well, it's been a real fine experience for me to interview you, Eric Martinson. And I wonder if there's anything you would like to add that by way of thoughts that came to your mind from questions I did not answer.
Well, I don't think of anything right at the moment. But
all right, thank you very much.